Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
This is a Lip Media podcast.
Hey, Juicy Lemoners, before we start the show, we wanted to remind you to follow and subscribe to us on whichever podcasting app you're listening to. And as always, enjoy the show. Think you're the best gift giver? This week on Lemon, it's mooncake season, but how well do we know the etiquettes of gift giving in Asian culture? And why is getting a tattoo so taboo in Asian culture still? And later on the show today, we have some amazing new recommendations to keep you entertained this week. Each week, we dissect the conversations Asian millennials are having, so don't go anywhere because you're listening to Lemon.
Hello, welcome to The Lemon Show. As always, my name is Philip.
And I'm Thomas Tan.
Tom, it's almost been a year since we started podcasting. I want to ask you, other than the reason why, like me forcing you to do podcasting, why did you think that you started doing podcasting? Why did you agree to do it with me?
Honestly, you already said the answer. This is the only reason why I started doing podcasting. I think doing podcasting, I didn't really have a drive or I want to do podcasting at first, but after you kind of encouraged me to get into it and after kind of meeting a lot of people through podcasting and hearing the stories that people message us about, I think it's quite rewarding in a way.
Besides the fact that I like forced you into this, I think one of the most rewarding things is definitely meeting all the amazing people that we've met and interviewed. And like, I've learned so much from the guests that we've interviewed. But for me personally, most people don't know, but like growing up, I had a lot of speech problems. Like I used to have a lisp and I was never really confident about public speaking. But I think doing this has really helped me become better at it. And it's also helped me with my real job as well. So when I'm doing interviews with about my business and stuff like that, it's given me a lot more clarity and a lot more confidence when I'm speaking and interviewing people or getting interviewed.
Because you have a publicist, I mean, it sounds really like, ooh, but you have a publicist, right? And your publicist always gives you like really good feedback whenever like you're on TV and then you're saying like, oh my gosh, I'm talking about Goldilocks or whatever.
I'm a bit famous. But no, like, I always get really good feedback from my publicist that she's always telling me that, oh, you know, you're so like, compared to my other clients, you're so like well-trained and like, you know what you're saying. But I think it really just comes down to podcasting, because when you do podcasting, you get really good at like thinking on the spot and just bantering around and making stuff up. Well, not making stuff up all the time, but like sometimes you just got to say stuff to fill in the gaps.
I think for me, after doing podcasting, what I've noticed about myself is that the way I speak and the way I think I realize that I actually know a bit more about the world than I used to. Like I was at a dinner party, like way before COVID started. And it was actually maybe just like a month before COVID started. And my friends were talking about worldviews, like, you know, policies, politics, Asian media, Asian this and that. And just questions that they'll just ask, like, oh, I know how to answer that. I did research on this. And it just kind of gave me a more broader perspective on the world that we're living in.
Well, that's the thing I was going to say. Like, we both came into this, like, we knew we're Asian, but like, we didn't have a big sense of identity. And I think doing this and speaking to a lot of people and talking about these topics that matter to our community, it's really taught me a lot about like myself and a lot about the Asian experience, Asian culture. So I think in a lot of ways, like this podcast has been a coming of age experience kind of as well. Like I've learned a lot about, learning to love being Asian and learning all the quirks and all the little things about being Asian, which we're going to talk a lot about as well in this later segment. But Tom, most people actually don't know, but like you actually don't even listen to any podcasts.
Is that bad to say? I host a podcast. I am in a podcast, but I don't listen to any podcasts at all. And I think it's because, I don't know, like whenever I listen to podcasts, it's very hard for me to find a
podcasts that I do really like enjoy. So just make one. No, but really, there are a lot of great podcasts out there as well. But for me, myself, more of a music person, and I love listening to music on Spotify. And the only podcast that I listen to is it weird to say Lemon?
Well, I can't wait for the day where you actually find a podcast that you really love, because that means that it's going to be a really good podcast.
True. But for anybody who's starting their own podcast out there, give it a go. You do meet a lot of amazing new people, and it honestly does change your life.
Let's take a live look now outside.
Ladies and gentlemen of America.
Ariana Grande licked and spit on the merchandise.
There can be 100 people in the room.
Leave Britney alone.
Catch me outside. How about that?
Rise and shine.
China.
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 So it's mooncake season, and all the mooncake memes are popping up on Facebook now. So you know it's mooncake season.
This is like the only first, sorry to jump in, but this is the first year that I've actually seen mooncakes become more commercialized, like a lot more popular this year. I don't know why.
Maybe commercialized, yeah. Definitely more commercialized. Like I saw like memes about mooncakes coming in LV boxes and like what the heck? Like that must be like a really expensive mooncake. But I really want to talk about gifting and the gifting etiquette in Asian culture, because obviously it's a season of gifting for Asian people. But I think like reading some articles about gifting, there's some etiquettes I did not realize that I shouldn't do. So I thought it'd be really good to share with everyone and with you as well. But the first one obviously is cash. Like, let's talk about cash. Tom, do you prefer receiving cash, or would you prefer like receiving a thought sentimental gift?
No, I prefer cash. Like I'm definitely a cash person. This actually brought me back to, because this year it's COVID. Not COVID season, that's happened every season, but it's COVID time. So what happened is my church group actually was very sweet. They actually organized a very special gift to me, like a very surprise gift. So they all chipped in and then they got me a very nice present. And we're kind of taking in terms that one person is in charge of organizing. So you kind of get like a bit of a Christmas kringle where you pick one name out of the box and you're in charge of organizing a birthday for that person for this year. So it came to my turn, and it was Anne, one of our church members. And so the budget is $100, so $10 per person. And then when it was my turn to buy her a gift, I had no idea what to buy for her. She pretty much has everything that she needs. And so the thing I did, it's supposed to be anonymous and it's supposed to be something that they would like. But I just messaged her, I was like, hey, I'm your Kris Kringle person. What do you want for $100? Like, link me and I'll buy it for you. So like, because I'm the type of person, right, when if it comes to gifts, I'm very particular that I like something that I can use, or something that's a bit more useful or practical for myself. If I receive a gift that I can't use, I mean, I'm very grateful for it, but it's just going to be sitting on my shelf.
Yeah, like all those candles that are on the shelf.
And the plushies.
And the plushies. But like, yeah, giving cash is not, like if you tell someone that's not Asian that we give cash as gifts, they think it's weird. Like they don't understand why Asian people just prefer cash. And I just think, like you said, it's so much more practical. Like, you know, if you give me cash, I can do whatever the hell I want with it. I can buy anything I like with it.
But when you receive cash as a present, is it a lot more, not memorable, but a lot more amazing? Like, for example, let's say your friend bought you something that you really liked for $100. Would you rather that, or would you rather, like, which is more like, oh my gosh, you bought that for me? Wow. Rather you get like $100 cash, right? And then you buy it yourself, but you forget that they bought it for you.
Okay, so I think when it comes to cash gifting, I prefer if it comes from my parents and my aunties, because I know they're going to get a lot. But if it's for my friends, I actually prefer like a sentimental gift, like a thought out gift, because I think, you know, because obviously you're not going to be expecting your parents, not your parents, but your friends to be giving you lots of money, unlike your parents. But yeah, I think with friends, I just like the idea that, you know, a lot of thought went into this, and, you know, they think that took time to think about me. And I think that's the nice part about having a sentimental gift. What about for yourself?
Honestly, someone actually bought me, like, gives me cash. My friends gave me cash. It's most likely just going to end up in my bank account. And I think because I'm the type of person that I really like to save a lot, right?
You're a hoarder.
I am a bit of a hoarder when it comes to money. And I just don't know how to enjoy my money very well. But if someone gives me money, I'm more of a long-term person. And I think that's why it's better if you're going to give me a gift. If it's not in cash, a gift card would be better. So I'm more inclined to buy. I mean, I'm definitely going to use a gift card.
Gift cards are a scam. I do not believe in gift cards.
I love gift cards.
First of all, they come with expiries, so you have to spend it within a certain time frame. And second of all, if they get you a gift card, you're stuck to that store, stuck to that brand.
Yeah, but if your friends are thinking of buying you a gift and they're going to pick that store anyways, it might as well have a better chance of giving something that you want
from that store. That's true. But I think when it comes to cash gifting, the only times where I would really prefer cash is if I'm spending a lot on an event. So, not to be so Asian, but a wedding, for example.
Mm.
Weddings are so damn expensive. So, if you can just at least give me some cash to cover that, I'll be really happy.
That just means that you're pretty much buying a ticket to attend someone's wedding, isn't it?
Well, Asian culture, that's what it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
I've had a few friends where we've been to some weddings, right? And there were some friends that, I'm not going to name names, but there's some friends who only give for example, this is going to be we go to a wedding, we know it's going to cost, this venue costs heaps and heaps of money. The food's amazing.
Wait, before you get started, how much would you give to a wedding? What is your personal amount?
Okay, my personal amount. Okay. Well, we're jumping a bit, but in Asian culture, giving someone cash, the amount that you give is tied to the value of that friendship. So if you give a lot of cash, that means that friend, or that person means a lot to you. But if you give a lot less, that means that friendship is not as valuable. So the reason why I got really a bit, not annoyed, but a bit shocked when I went to my friend's wedding and seeing other friends give cash, I saw one of my friends gave $50 or $40 for a big ass venue.
Oh my goodness.
A big wedding. I was like, oh my God.
So sad.
I am stressed for you because I'm so embarrassed for you because when this friend opens up this, this thing and sees how much you give, it's only $40.
But shouldn't the person who's hosting that wedding be grateful that regardless of how many X amount of money that you are giving, that they just want you to attend a special day in their day? So it's whatever, $0 or $1,000. I mean, best scenario ever, but isn't that what it's supposed to be about?
Well, in practical terms, yeah. Asian people are very superstitious, and my mom especially is very superstitious. She's always looking for her eights and her phone numbers and buying a house that starts with her eights.
You have a house guardian as well.
House guardian, yeah. A lot of thought goes into everything.
Can I just say that you actually need another house guardian because I don't think your house guardian is doing your job for you very well.
What do you mean?
The other day when we were recording our podcast, when I was coming over to your place to record it, your garage door was full on open and it was the door was open, nothing was locked. And someone could have just walked in, you would have just died.
Well, I didn't die, so I guess they did their job.
Yeah.
going back to superstition. So, okay, first of all, there's a lot of words and a lot of phrases in Chinese culture that means a bad thing, but you don't realize it's a bad thing. So, for example, if you bought someone's shoes, they'll be super offended because shoes, I'm not going to try and pronounce shoes because my Chinese suck, but buying someone's shoes is really offensive in Chinese culture or Asian culture because shoes sound like evil in Chinese. Is that true?
I don't know.
Look,
my Chinese is really bad.
I got this on an article. I obviously don't know Chinese, but...
I mean, is that the same thing as watch? As when someone buys you a watch?
Yes, so buying a watch, if you buy someone a watch, it's the same... It's like you're waiting for them to die because there's the phrase... Well, I got this written down. It says... A phrase for care for a dying elderly person or waiting for someone to die.
What? Actually, no, I've heard about these superstitions. I think that's more as buying than someone a clock. I've bought my friends so many watches and some of them turn out to be fake, but still, the thought is there. But when it comes to, if someone bought me a watch, my grandmother bought me a watch. I don't think she wants me to die. I hope not. Well, actually, no. I did buy my uncle a knife a while back. And apparently, because he's really into knives, he loves cooking and loves looking at knives. So I bought him a really expensive, state-of-the-art, branded knife. And when I bought it, my mom was like, whoa, you're buying your uncle a knife. Do you know what that means? I'm like, no, it's something to do with bad luck or you want something to die. It's because of this knife, right?
Yeah, sharp.
So and when I looked it up, Google was to me, if you want to give a knife, you have to give them a coin. So first thing you do is you give them the coin first, and then what they'll do is that they'll give you the coin back and then you pass a knife to them. So they're buying the knife. Oh. And I'm like, what the heck? This is so dumb, so stupid. 2 months later, I gave my uncle the coin first.
Oh my gosh. Well, the other one was fruit basket. So obviously in Asian culture, people love giving fruits. Mm. Like fruit is like the love language of Asian people. But if you're ever giving a fruit basket, you have to take out the pear. Because
what?
Because pear, like correct me, anyone can correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't know Chinese. I just got this off Google. But apparently the phrase pear is also, there's a phrase that's in Chinese, the Chinese language that's similar, which is sharing a pear. So it means to separate or part ways. So if you're giving it to a loved one, you'll want to break up with them pretty much. Oh. It's a sign that you want to break up with them.
Shit, so, I didn't know that.
If you're ever buying a fruit basket, that's one to look out for. So take out the pears. Okay, there's a couple more that that I want to touch on. Okay, the other one is, you know how like Asian people, when we're going out to eat, and we always reject the other person paying for it.
Mm.
So it's the same thing. Like if you're giving a gift to someone, expect to know it first, but you have to ask once again. So obviously every person is going to say no.
When it comes to gifting.
Yeah, even when it comes to gifting, you have to reject the gift. So if you're the person receiving the gift, you have to say no first. Otherwise, it seems rude if you just take it.
I never reject. I'm like, for me, thanks.
Wow. No wonder everyone thinks you're rude.
Oh, just kidding.
But yeah, you have to say no. But if you're the person giving the gift, expect a no, but you have to offer it again. But if they keep saying no, then that's where the line is drawn.
Do you know what? One of the things that I'm a bit like, let's say someone buys you a gift, right, or gives you money, like, oh, no, I cannot take it. And they're like, no, please take it. And like, no, I can't take it. And then they're like, oh, okay, if you really don't want it, okay, I'll take it back. And you're like, okay.
Well, I think there are some scenarios where you wouldn't want to take the gift because like you'd feel like you owe them something and you feel like you can't pay them back. Like, cause you, for example, like there are some people who are really good at giving gifts. Like they give really expensive gifts. So if you take that, like how are you going to top that gift?
Actually, yesterday I got a gift in my mail package, right? And it was from my friend Lisa, who actually listens to the show. And she sent me Barocca. And she said to me, oh, Thomas, you know, you said that you've been tired a lot, you know, so I decided to give you, you know, Barocca, and it's going to help you feel a little bit better. I'm like, oh, thank you so much. And then I kind of messaged her, thank you so much. But then if someone gives you a gift, which is like medicine or something good for you, be like, no, thank you. No, I'll just end up, I'll stay tired. Thank you.
You should ask for cash. okay, this next one is a bit of a shock for me because growing up, like, I was always taught to not open gifts when I get them, especially when it's my birthday. My parents always tell me, don't open the gift because if you open a gift, that's really rude.
Why though?
And the thing is, as I got older, and when I'd celebrate my birthday with my friends, they would always ask me to open the gifts. And I hated it so much because
oh my gosh, yes.
There's so much pressure in giving a reaction. So this is the reason why Asian people don't open the gifts when they receive the gifts.
No, I 100% agree. Their reaction, like, you have to be like an Oscar winning award person in order to pull it off. I remember there was one birthday scenario, right? And someone bought me an amazing gift, like an amazing, amazing gift. And it was really expensive. But all I wanted that year was a hairbrush. So when I opened this amazing gift, I'm like, shit, how do I react to this? I'm like, thank you so much. I love it. And then when I opened the hairbrush, like my friend bought me a hairbrush, I'm like, oh my God, I got a hairbrush.
You're more excited about the hairbrush.
I was more excited about the hairbrush. And I think when you have to open a gift, you have to play it up. And because I'm not a great actor, then people are going to think, like, and then I start overthinking in my head, is this too much? Oh my gosh, they probably think I'm fake. I'm a fake bitch. Shit, I shouldn't have opened the present. And then you start circling this thing in your head, right? And so I agree 100%. Never open the gift in front of anybody.
But yeah, I guess like people like with our friends, they expect us to open it. So that's the problem. And like, you know, like, how do you, like, what if, yeah, the same thing that you said, like, what if you give a reaction that's bigger than the other gift, then all your other friends are going to think their gift's a shit.
It's true.
So can we please everyone just, like,
Opening gifts.
Yeah, can we just open the gift in our own time? can we just make that a thing?
That's pretty much it. That's all the gifting etiquettes of Asian culture.
Unless your mooncake is like an LV box or like a Philippa Tech box. You have to open that in front of people.
You just got to see that one.
I mean, you don't even have to wrap it. Just give it as it is.
Well, would love to know what gifting etiquettes that we missed that you guys think that we should have discussed. Is there anything that we missed? Anything that Asian people should be doing or that we shouldn't be doing? Head over to our Facebook page and let us know what you think. There'll be more Lemon coming up, but first, here's a few words from today's sponsors.
To all our Japanese lovers and Japan cultural lovers, Japan has, and I say this in quotation marks, legalized tattooing. And so in Japan, I'm not sure if you know, Phil, but getting a tattoo is considered from a person who is not licensed. It was considered illegal back then. But now Japan, the court has actually made tattooing legalized for people who are in the medical profession because they believe that there's a lot of risk involved with because a lot of needlework, a lot of risk of infection. So they, for many, 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 many years, the only way to get a tattoo was from someone who had a medical license.
Before you told me this, I was a bit shocked. I was like, oh, I thought tattoo was always a thing in every country and in Japan as well.
Me too.
Because I remember doing a trip to Japan a few years ago or doing a big Asia trip with my friend, and he was looking at getting tattoos in Japan and he was like hitting up all these tattoo artists in Japan. So I always thought it was just a thing, but I didn't know it was so underground.
It's really underground. So in order to get it, you have to be really hush and you have to know people who do their tattoos. It's like nowadays, since we're in lockdown, getting a haircut is illegal, right?
I was thinking about that.
So in order to get a haircut now, you have to go underground.
Oh my gosh. We have not been going those underground barbers, but we know people who know people who go to underground barbers because in Melbourne, we're in our sixth or seventh month of lockdown now. So everyone's hair is growing out. So it's so funny.
But back to the topic. The reason why I want to do this topic was because there's a lot of taboo and a lot of stigmatism when it comes to tattoos. And I don't have any tattoos myself. You don't have any tattoos, but you have a lot of friends who do have tattoos. Mm. And recently what has happened, an article that was actually published probably a couple of weeks ago, a tattoo, a girl named Casey, who was 16 at the time, decided to get a tattoo on her ankle of a dream catcher. And she was 16 at the time when she got it. So in Australia, you have to get a permission slip from your parents. They have to sign it off. But her parents were divorced. So her father, Bradley, who is a massive tattoo fan, encouraged, I'm going to sign your permission slip. I'll let you get that tattoo. So she went on and got that tattoo. And then when her mum found out, she was livid. She was oh my goodness, how dare you? So now the mum is actually suing the ex-husband and saying that this is assault and this is actually bodily harm and wounding a person with intent to cause grievous bodily harm. So now they're going to court over a dream catcher tattoo on her ankle. So for yourself, what are your thoughts on tattoos?
I don't have anything. There's nothing wrong with getting a tattoo. A lot of my friends have it. I personally don't have it because I just don't want to be in that situation where I get something tattooed and it actually means something else. That's my worst nightmare.
Oh, when white people get a tattoo of something real and it says water.
Yeah, that's my worst nightmare. Just have an idea of having something so permanent. What do you decide to put on there? It's just so hard. I don't want to put my mum's name. I love my parents, but it's just so, there's so many other ways to show your affection to your parents other than getting a tattoo.
Mm.
But look, if I ever got a tattoo, my mum would probably sue me for getting a tattoo. When I was 18, I got my ears pierced and that was such a big issue in my family. My mum was like, nah, we lost him. We lost him to the gangsters.
You got both ears pierced, right?
Yeah.
There was actually a very funny story that I know somebody who actually got one of their ears pierced. It's a male person. And I was part of performing that bodily
like
mutilation on his ears.
Underground?
It was. I mean, like, we bought it off eBay. There's like self-piercing guns. So me and my friend Luke brought a gun, and then we wanted to pierce our friends because we wanted to get it done, but he didn't want to do it in the shops, which was only like $10.50. I'm thinking back, like, why didn't we just do it in the shop? And if we did it for him, and then his parents were like, oh my gosh, my son is gay. My son is gay. So they actually started leaving out anti-gay church pamphlets all over his house.
Oh my gosh.
From just one earring. And now this got me thinking, with tattoos and earrings, right? Why is it such a big deal for Asian parents? So I did a bit of digging. And back in the 80s and 90s in Hong Kong, there were a lot of those violent gang movies, right? So like in Hong Kong, they have the movies called The Legendary, The Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. I think you've heard of that one. And with a lot of Gen Xs and baby boomers, they associate tattoos, bodily mutilation, is it? What it's, I mean,
it sounds so bad.
It does sound bad. Body mutilation. But you're just picking a hole in your ear.
But like, but all of our parents have, like, my mum has earrings.
And they, do you know what's even worse? My mum has tattooed her eyelids too.
Mine too, actually.
And their eyebrows.
Oh my God, she has actually. That reminds me, she tattooed her eyebrows.
Exactly.
And I'm sure she tattooed, like, around your lips. You can tattoo around your lips too.
I think you can.
Oh my God, my mum is the biggest hypocrite.
And it's because with the bodily dragon tattoos, in those movies, it's associated with gangs. And the term hooligan, like a hooligan, hooligan, I don't know how to pronounce it.
Hooligan.
Hooligans. So I think when children, their children or our parents do see us with tattoos, they do associate us with gangs. And they don't want to see it as gangs. Like, oh, my child's gone. Oh, they're going to die. And now you brought up like our parents getting tattoos. What the heck?
What's...
Actually, no, I actually spoke to my mum about this a while back. I asked her, how old were you when you got that tattoo? She's like, oh, you know, because she got it done in Canada when she was studying there. And she's like, oh, you know, I got it done with my bunch of friends and I, you know, we were just young and I shouldn't have done it. And then I'm like, well, I'm in your shoe now and I don't do it. Like, you're actually worse than me. And she's like, yeah, it's because she was too lazy to put on eyeliner and putting on eyeliner every day. So she got her eyebrows and her eyelids tattoos. And now over years, like, now it's not black anymore. It's like, it's fading to, like, you know, that bit of like a dark blue.
Yeah.
And when we go back to Malaysia, she tops up her eyebrows. And then whenever I'm like, holy crap, I never got my tattoos pierced. Not my tattoos pierced. I never got my ears pierced. I don't have any tattoos on my body. I don't do any body mutilations, but I want to do it, but I'm scared to do it because of that stigmatism being brought down from my mom.
But why do you want to do it though? Like, what's the reason behind getting a tattoo for you?
I don't know.
Is it like defying the Asian stereotypes? Like, is that what it is? Or is
I
it
think
like,
it's one of those things that I, like, if I think about it, I think probably it's one of those things that I just want to stick at and seem a bit like, oh, look at me, I'm a bit indie. I'm a perks on a wallflower type of guy. And then, like, okay, this is, like, very Christian thing, but a lot of Christians are like, oh, you know, I want to get a cross on my wrist over here or on my hand or on the side of my neck.
Like Justin Bieber.
Yeah. It's a very Christian thing. And because, like, God wrote a lot to us, so we want to get it, but we want to do it in a very rebellious kind of way.
Oh, well, yeah, like, I remember when I got my ears pierced when I was 18. That's the reason why I did it, though. Like, you know, I turned 18. Like, I didn't need my parents' permission anymore.
You don't need permission
to get an ears pierced. For me, it was like, yeah, coming of age thing. Like, you know, I just wanted to do it because I can. And, but for a lot of people, getting a tattoo is there's a lot of significance behind it. Like, you know, it means belonging to a culture, showing where your tribe is, you know, like you said, like a lot of Christian people get crosses tattooed. Like you want to show people where you're from. So I don't know, like, I don't know why getting a tattoo is such a bad thing.
I think when it comes to tattoos, my cousin who got her tattoo for the very first, she got a, I think like a rose or a flower on her shoulder. And I remember the day that she got it, she showed me and my sister and I was like, holy shit, your mom is going to kill you. Like, she, like, her mom is like very anti-tattoo, the kind of person. And I'm, oh my gosh, I'm going to pray for you and hopefully like your mom doesn't kill you, you'll find out. So for the next couple of years, whenever she's at home, she's been wearing like cardigans. And whenever it gets really hot, I'm like, oh my gosh, you poor thing. She's wearing like a jumper to hide. I mean, of all obvious places, why pick like the collarbone or like to show it? And she had to suffer for so many years. But when her mom found out, I was surprised for the fact that her mom didn't kill her or kick her out. And I think what's to do is that because she knew her daughters were a little bit rebellious. But then it just made me think like, oh, maybe some parents can change as well.
Actually, the story about your friend, I have an exact same, like, exact friend who's in the same situation, and she's a teacher.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know who I'm talking about. Yep. So her parents actually don't know she has, like, a tattoo sleeve on
her
arm.
She has a lot of tattoos.
She has a lot of tattoos, but, like, on the outside, she looks like a really good Christian. She's
Korean,
like,
girl.
She's not even Christian.
But
she's
she gives Christian vibes.
She does give you Christian vibes, and she's like a, and she's a teacher as well. So,
and
like,
she's Korean.
She seems, and she's Korean, so she seems very wholesome. So whenever she's at home with her parents, she always just wears long sleeve, even summer. And she teaches at a private school. So
is it like a Catholic school as well?
Catholic school as well. Oh. So she has to wear cardigans and jumpers, even in the summer. And I think one day she accidentally, like, pulled up her sleeve and this, like, some of the students saw it. And then they came up to her. They're like, we know your secret. Because she doesn't want any of the other teachers or the principals to know, because it might get her in trouble. But the students were like, yeah, we know your secret, miss.
Oh my gosh. Well, you better shut your hole, you stupid brat. Yeah. But do you know that tattoo that she has? I know what each one's talking about. It's a skull.
It's a skull, yeah.
So within, like, Catholics and Christian, like, oh my gosh, that says, like, death.
Uh-huh.
Let's pray for her too. Imagine all the, and then you see so many internet tattoos where it's like they spell respect wrong, or they or they get, like, the words mixed up or whatever. But I think that's my biggest fear. But coming back to the topic, I reckon that within our generation, with the millennial generation and the generation below us, there's a lot of cool factor when it comes to tattoo, but it's something that's a lot more personal. And I think the more time passes, I think more people are realizing that tattoos, you don't have to be in a gang to get a tattoo.
I think you're definitely right. I think the reason why it's such a taboo topic is because, like you said, the portrayal in the 80s and the 90s in Asian media was all about gang violence. And, you know, especially in Japan, you know, where the Yakuzas,
right?
You know, they all had tattoos because they wanted to show it, you know, that they were part of the Yakuza. So I think in especially in Japan, the reason why it's still illegal and so taboo is because of that exact reason. Like, people in Japan just automatically assume if you have a tattoo, you're part of a gang. And they don't want the youth to be part of the gangs. But look, things are looking a bit better now. I think our parents, like, I think especially our generation, they've kind of accepted that, you know, where they were 20 years ago. Like, our parents 20, 30 years ago, I'm sure they did things to rebel against their generation. So, like, you know, getting a tattoo on your eyebrows, like, I'm sure that would have been, like, a big deal.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, I think going forward, I think just, you know, just do it if you feel like it. Just don't.
But
Google Translate.
Don't do it because you feel like, that's such bad advice. do it only if like, you know, it's, you're not going to have any regrets later. That is the advice we're going to give. Make smart choices. Don't do it because you feel like it, but definitely don't not get a tattoo just because of your parents. Actually, that's really bad advice. We're telling parents, like, people to rebel against their parents too.
I mean, like,
just do whatever you want. Don't listen to, like, us. Do you know, like, before we go on, I'm the type of person that when I give advice, I put, like, I don't know.
Put a disclaimer on it.
Disclaimer, I don't know if it ruins your life. Good luck, just because I don't ruin their life. So same thing, I think, when it comes to tattoos. Do it if you want to, but I don't know.
All right, let's go to recommendation time, because I also want to recommend what you're going to recommend. So do the honors, recommend that to the people.
I am into the Paris Hilton documentary. So Paris Hilton just released a documentary on YouTube, on her YouTube page, and is it called This Is Paris, is it?
Yes, This Is Paris.
And this is something that I've been really talking to all my friends about. And I don't really watch a lot of TV or a lot of TV shows, but this is something where I'm telling all my friends, even my, like, super wholesome Christian family, watch the Paris Hilton documentary. And the reason why I'm really into this show is because you see a lot of, like, a different perspective on her. So for those who don't really know Paris Hilton, like, you know, she was known for her sex scandal when she was young, party girl, the simple life that she and Nicole Richie were in. And she's known to be the original Kardashian and the, I guess,
She was the original influencer.
That's
what they portrayed her as in the documentary. And it's so true, though. She was the original influencer.
And she invented the selfie.
She did. Oh, my God. I can't believe she actually did invent the selfie.
But a lot of people who don't know her before this documentary, give a lot of shit in terms of who she is as a person. Like materialistic, plastic, all about that kind of high roller life. But they don't actually get to see a part of her, which is actually quite opening. So if I've always been a Paris Hilton fan, and there was something about her which I truly did like a lot. And something about her that it was just so enjoyable to watch. And you could see behind the way they filmed her, even on The Simple Life, that she is actually a very intelligent girl. Even though the public makes her seem a bit stupid. And when this documentary came out, it solidified, like, this is the reason why I love her so much. Mm. It's because she's brilliant, she's smart.
Hard worker.
And you see a life where she takes you on her journey, that the life that she's living, yes, it's all about glitz and glamour and money, but there's a lot of sadness to it as well.
Mm. And I think what I really love about this documentary is that it just, that same old story, like, don't judge a book by its cover. And
question for you first. Did you like Paris Hilton before you watched the documentary?
I did. I think especially in the past year, I've been watching a lot of her YouTube videos of her cooking lasagna and stuff.
But that's her playing herself.
I know, but I just love her. As a person, I just love her. She's just, there's something elegant about her.
But do you know what's funny? After you watched her documentary, you messaged me, you're like, I love Paris Hilton now. She's amazing. I love her. And then what? You probably want to go stream. What's that song? The stars are blind.
Stars are blind. No, I just love that, you know, she's not that she's fooled the world, but like she knows what the people want and she just gives it to them. And, you know, she's played up this character that that's made her pretty much rich and successful. And I just love that about her. I think she's just so smart and clever, and then people don't give her a lot of credit for it.
Mm. And in the documentary, if you haven't seen, this is a little bit of a spoiler, so you might want to skip this part, but she talks about how she was actually abused when she was younger, and that she was actually locked up in a... It's like a
behavior correction center.
Like a boarding school, right?
It's like a boarding school, but they really go like...
abusive, like a beyond.
Yeah.
Like if you do something bad and she was known to be rebellious, like they'll lock her up in a cell. And she blocked out a lot of those parts of those memories. So then the more you watch it, the more you found out, like, this is like that documentary, Don't Fuck With Cats. Mm. Like, oh my goodness, like, holy shit. So then she brings along all these women who were in the same year level as her. And... She brings them to her house, and then they all go through this kind of trauma recovery together, that they were abused by this school mentally. And all these women, young girls who were at this school, they're now living with that trauma for the rest of their life.
Mm, you can see it. There's just so much pain. The only critique I have about this documentary is that her parents didn't know about this. So when she did tell her mom about it on the camera, it didn't seem like her mum was very apologetic. And I don't know, like, you know, maybe something else happened after the filming ended. Maybe her mum apologized. But, you know, all through her childhood, they were the ones who were trying to take her away and trying to correct her behavior instead of asking her what's wrong.
I call bullshit on that. I don't think that her parents did not know. You could see her body language when the producer brought it up. Did you know that Paris was, you know, locked in solitary confinement, is it?
Mm.
And her mom was like, she paused for a little bit and you can see her think. And she's like, no, I didn't. And then she went to go touch her lip. And you know, like those psychology things that when someone's lying, like they're trying to cover, like do something with their body language. And you could just see like, bullshit, Kathy Hilton. Like you knew about it. Your daughter told you about it, but you didn't believe her because you know she was acting out. And you think as a mother that you are actually helping her. So, and then it fast forward to the point where she actually speaks about it to her mum. I could just like call bullshit.
Yeah,
her mum. Mum's so cold to her.
Yeah, she didn't seem very apologetic about it. Yeah. But look, go watch the documentary. It's such a great documentary.
It's a really, really good documentary. But what would you recommend this week?
Okay, so I've been nagging you to watch The Social Dilemma. Everyone's talking about it at the moment, but it's on Netflix. But it's basically about, it's a documentary about social media, and it has all the people who used to work at Google, Facebook, Twitter, Reddit, the people who invented the like button, the people who invented Gmail, people who invented every single thing that you see on social media today. And they talk about how when they first invented it, the, you know, the like button, for example, they just wanted to, you know, use it for something else, but then now it's become used as a tool against the people. But yeah, in the documentary, they just talk about how all these social media, you know, they have so much data on people and all these different algorithms, really smart algorithms that are so smart that they can recommend things to you to keep you using the social media app or the social media, you know, website, whatever, and keep you on there for hours and hours and hours and hours. And it becomes like, you just become addicted to it. Like the colors that they choose to use, like everything is so, the things that they use is, they use it with the intention of keeping you on there, because at the end of the day, the more attention, the more time you spend on the website and the app, the more money they make.
Mm.
And so the reason why it's called the social dilemma is because they talked about how it's kind of creating a divide in people, especially in today's age. There's more divisiveness between people more than ever. Like if you're on the right side of politics, you're going to be on the right side of politics. If you're on the left side, you're going to be on the left side. And this is the reason why, you know, for example, your newsfeed might look completely different to my newsfeed because that's completely created for you and for me. And like, especially in like the past recent months of, you know, you've seen a lot of people, you know, anti-vaxxers, like just saying all this nonsense. You're like, how can you believe this? But the reason why they believe it is because that's all they see in their newsfeed. And so they do believe it. Like, and then it makes me doubt the things that I've read. I'm like, wait, am I kind of like falling into the trap? Like, are the things I'm reading, are they actually true? Or am I just like the anti-vaxxers?
You actually brought up really good points. My co-writer, he doesn't use Facebook, and he actually says that the reason why is because he doesn't want to deal with the bullshit that Facebook gives, and exactly what you said. But what he's actually been happening for him in real life now, he's been getting in snail mail. So you know how, like, when we...
snail mail.
When we... Let's say we're talking about something in public, and then Siri's like listening to our conversation, hi to the CIA, hello FBI, yeah. And then we see it pop up on our Facebook because of like cookies, and they're listening to our conversations, right? We all know that. And then we see it on a wish list, ooh, go buy this special blanket or buy this slipper because you were talking about it or because you Google searched it. For him, it's on like another level. He was telling me how, because he doesn't use social media, anything like that, he was talking to his wife about getting a new plumbing job because they need to get a new plumber. And usually if you talk about that, Google's going to recommend it to you straight away. But for him, he got a pamphlet in the mail about a new plumber. So when he called, like when we had a writing session, he's like, Thomas, you would not believe it. He's like, guess what? I'm like, what? And he told me I got the plumber, because he was telling me about the plumber too. He said a couple of days later, he got a pamphlet in his inbox, a physical inbox, that he got a pamphlet about the plumbing. And then he was like, I'm so shocked. I thought this happened online. So now we're conspirizing, like, holy crap, could this be a real life thing too?
Wow, this is called next level, hasn't it? But I think I'm really conflicted because as someone who does, you know, social, like digital marketing, like these tools that Facebook gives us to do, you know, retarget marketing and, you know, putting in a demographic that you want to target specifically, like that's godsend. Like it just helps from a business perspective, like you save so much money because you know exactly who you're advertising to. But at the same time, like I'm also feeding the machine, like I'm telling the machine that, you know, I want people to be spending time on Facebook, and so they're gonna be creating and you know the app and the social network to do that. So it's just, for me, it's a conflict, but I'm like, oh my god, like it's also a great tool for you know, lots of businesses.
So what can, like, because you know a lot of more about this than I do, but what can we do, like after you watch a show, like what are you going to do to change about yourself?
I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to make my newsfeed a lot more balanced. I think you have to follow people that you don't agree with because people, like, especially, you know, people in today, like we love believing that we're right. So when we go out to look for information, we always try and find people who agree with us. So that just that doesn't really give you a perspective of things. So if you want to have a balanced perspective, you have to be following people that you don't agree with. So recently, I unfollowed the Herald Sun because I'm just sick of their articles.
Oh my god, I'm sick of the Herald Sun and the Age too. But, and the Daily Mail, so much bullshit.
But at the same time, like, because I don't politically believe in everything that they spurt out, I think it's healthy to follow them because, you know, it's good to get a different perspective of things, to question, you know, to question what you're thinking.
Mm.
So I think that's my suggestion for anyone out there.
I think for me, I haven't watched it yet. I probably will watch it. But knowing what I know now, I probably won't do anything much, to be honest. Because I'm like one of those people, like, oh, if it's already been done, you know, and there's nothing I can do, like the tech world is so powerful and I'm just mini me, like a little ant. They're going to do anything. Like, if the city wants to come arrest me, they could have just done so. Yeah. I probably won't do anything about it.
I think people, our generation, don't care about that they have a lot of data on us. But I think there are some real life consequences. And I just think, when you do think about it, it is quite scary what they can use the data for. Mm. You know, for example, like the election in the US is coming up. Like you don't know how people might use that data for. Like, you know, you might get Donald Trump like using that data to target ads at specific people and different minority groups to get votes that way and spread out fake news. So fake news is such a big thing.
No, that is true. And I think what they're quite clever now, even by releasing the Social Dilemma, it's, for me, I think of it is now they're kind of hiding in plain sight where, do you know when people, a secret comes out, right? And they just burn and say, yeah, it's true. Now, oh, okay, it's true. And then they just, it's like, it's just happening. No money's going to change or whatever's happening. So I'm actually interested who actually created the Social Dilemma and the people who are in charge, because a lot of people now, when they do know, like, it used to be a big thing that your phones could track everywhere you're walking, they're listening to your conversation. But now because people know about it and it's hidden in plain sight, people don't really care, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, that's our suggestion. So, you know, go and watch the Paris Hilton documentary and also watch The Social Dilemma on Netflix.
And also stream The Stars Are Blind and Nothing
Iconic
in This World to Stop Us Tonight.
Well, that's all we have time for this week. Thank you so much for joining us. As always, if you like the show, then subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify or Acast. And we'll see you guys next week.
Looking for a new podcast to listen to? Here's What We Love, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Join me, Kim Zolciak-Bierman, and my husband, Corey Bierman, for a brand new episode of House of Kim every Wednesday, where we unapologetically share the ups and downs of our unpredictable life with six kids that you may have seen on Bravo TV. I have been a parent since I was 18 years old and was a single parent for many, 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 many years. When you become a mother, you'll understand that drive to succeed, that passion. They give you another force behind your body that you'll never understand until you're there. And just like you guys, we are always trying to find a way to inspire and increase positivity in our daily lives. A little something like this.
It's your life. You should live your life and you should want to live your life to the best and fullest. Do what makes you happy.
Listen to House of Kim on Acast or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast
recommends.